Fieldpod.com or go to Fillmore Street. This is Fieldpod.com. The Week in Georgia, in English, coming to you from San Francisco's Lower Haight. Today is Thursday, the 13th of April, 2017. On this date, in 1204, crusaders from Western Europe sacked Constantinople. Relations between the Roman Catholic West and Orthodox East are severely damaged, and Byzantium is permanently weakened, setting it up to be conquered by the Ottomans 2 centuries later. 1826, Catholics in the United Kingdom gain the rights to vote and sit in Parliament. 1943, Nazi forces uncover mass graves of thousands of Polish prisoners killed by Soviet leaders 3 years earlier in the Kachin Forest in modern-day Belarus. To go over the timeline, the 23rd of August, 1939, the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact is signed. The Germans invade Poland a week later. Millions flee east. 2 weeks later, the Soviets signed the Molotov-Togo Agreement, ending Russian-Japanese hostilities, and the Soviet army invaded Poland from the east. The Soviets then rounded up and executed 22,000 people in April and May 1940, more or less the political, intellectual, religious, and military leadership of the country. Soviet governments denied it for decades. 1945, Soviet and Bulgarian forces capture Vienna, which is occupied by the Red Army until 1955. 1964, Sidney Poitier becomes the first African-American to win an Oscar for Best Actor for his performance in Lilies of the Field. 1975, the Lebanese Civil War begins when members of the Falangist Party attack and kill 26 members of the PLO. 1987, Portugal and the People's Republic of China sign an agreement to return Macau to China by 1999. Birthdays are Thomas Jefferson, Samuel Beckett, Christopher Hitchens, and Garry Kasparov. I'm your host, Mark Mullen. Podcast is written by Joe Larson. If you want to comment or ask a question, go to tpelpod.com or send us an email at tpelpod, T-B-L-P-O-D, at gmail.com. Voters in South Ossetia went to the polls to elect a president and decide on whether to change the territory's name to the Republic of South Ossetia, the state of Alania. In both instances, voters decided to break with the status quo. Antony Bibilov, South Ossetia's parliamentary speaker, won the presidential race with just under 55% of the vote, beating incumbent President Leonid Tibilov, who received 34%. Bibilov will be inaugurated on the 22nd of April. The outcome is surprising because Tibilov was the preferred candidate of the Kremlin. Few factors have been offered as explanation for this unexpected outcome. Disappointment with Tibilov's failure to alleviate poverty and improve the region's stagnating economy. Bibilov effectively and accurately labeled the incumbent president as corrupt. Support given to Bibilov by South Ossetia's ex-president Edward Kokoiti, who told his supporters to vote for the parliamentary speaker after he was barred from running himself, and possibly growing enthusiasm on the part of the population for speedy unification with Russia, something that Bibilov has been pushing since 2014. Some observers are speculating that Kokoiti agreed to support Bibilov in exchange for the premise of a senior government post, but that hasn't been confirmed. Bibilov's main policies are that he wants to hold a referendum on joining Russia by the end of 2017, something that sets him apart from other high-profile figures in South Ossetia. He's demanding that Tbilisi recognize South Ossetia as an independent state and sign an agreement on the non-use of force. On the same day, about 80% of the voters voted yes in a referendum to formally change the region's name to the Republic of South Ossetia, the state of Alania. New name mirrors that of North Ossetia, which is part of the Russian Federation, which South Ossetia's government wants to unify with. That didn't go over well with Georgia, the U.S., NATO, and the EU, several other countries. Ambassador to the U.S., David Bakradze, called it a provocation by Russia aimed at undermining Georgia's efforts at reconciliation between communities divided by the occupation lines, and a move aimed at laying the groundwork for Russia's formal and legal annexation of the region. Interesting that Bakradze is in Washington. I would say that comments from Tbilisi were a little bit more muted. Following up on constitutional reform processes, Parliamentary Speaker Irakli Kobakhidze, speaking at a meeting of the Constitutional Reform Commission, denied claims that the commission's goal is to weaken the presidency. He said that under any reforms made, the president will remain the head of state, commander-in-chief, and the main representative in foreign relations. He also defended plans to make the president elected indirectly and move towards a proportional system for electing parliamentarians. Two plans he has described in detail on several occasions over the past month. The Constitutional Reform Commission will publish its formal recommendations on the 30th of April. As we'll discuss later, they are incredibly dangerous for democracy in Georgia. Parliamentary Parliament passed a ban on indoor smoking, which will prohibit smoking in all buildings except private houses and prisons. Fine will range from 50 to 5,000 lari, depending on specific offenses. For example, an individual caught smoking aboard a bus will be fined 50 lari, while a business that allows smoking on its premises could be fined up to 5,000 lari. New regulations will start to go into effect on the 1st of January 2018, will be gradually phased in until 2020. This version of the bill was submitted to Parliament in February by Giuli Maharadze of Otsneba. Travel to and from Georgia, a Belgian parliamentary delegation led by head of parliament Siegfried Barak was in Tbilisi this week to meet with President Margvelashvili, Prime Minister Kvitikashvili, Patriarch Ilya II, Foreign Minister Mikhail Janalidze, former Speaker of Parliament Dato Usupashvili, and current Parliamentary Speaker Irakli Kobakhidze. Janalidze was in Yerevan this week to meet with Armenian President Serge Sarkisian, Foreign Minister Edward Nalbandian, and Prime Minister Karin Karpetyan. After that, Janalidze went to Warsaw to meet with foreign ministers of the Eastern Partnership and Visegrad Group countries, which include the Czech Republic, Hungary, Poland, Slovakia, while Eastern Partnership countries are in Georgia, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Belarus, Moldova, and Ukraine. The meeting's purpose was to prepare for the Eastern Partnership Summit, scheduled in Brussels for this November. Prime Minister of Economy Gheorghe Gacharia flew to Delhi this week to launch talks on bilateral free trade agreement between Georgia and India. The two sides signed a memorandum on commissioning a feasibility study on free trade between the two countries. During the meeting, Georgia and India signed an air service agreement to promote aviation and flight development between the two countries. They also discussed the possibility of India opening an embassy in Georgia. President Margvelashvili gave his annual address to the nation on the 7th of April. He spent most of his 29-minute speech criticizing Otsneba, saying that they isolated themselves and are rejecting dialogue with other parties. The prospect that the constitutional majority could lead to an unhealthy concentration of power has turned into a reality, and the proposed reforms do not inspire confidence. He also accused the ruling party of failing to fight crime, acting inappropriately in passing the new surveillance bill, and moving the country towards an indirect system for electing the president. One area where he gave Otsneba credit was European integration. He noted that Georgia has made real progress, but the government needs to continue moving forward to become an EU applicant country. Prime Minister Kvitikashvili shot back, going all passive-aggressive, saying he wished the president's address had been deeper, more objective, and richer in content. Defense Ministry signed a two-year agreement with France that includes providing the Georgian armed forces with new air defense equipment and personnel training. Isodi will go to Paris next week and meet with his French counterpart, Jean-Yves Le Drian, where they'll hammer out details of the agreement. Foreign and defense ministries backed last week's U.S. airstrikes against Syria, with Foreign Minister Janalidze calling the move timely and proportional. Defense Minister Levan Izoria said the same in a separate statement. Archpriest Gheorghe Mamaladze filed a lawsuit with the European Court of Human Rights, or ECHR. His suit alleges that the authorities are violating Article 6 of the European Convention, which covers the principle of fair trial. In particular, the prosecutor's office won't allow Mamaladze's legal team to release any case materials to the public. Mamaladze is being represented at the ECHR by the Human Rights Center. Minister of Infrastructure Zurab Alavidze presented the country's infrastructure development for 2017 to 20 members of government and civil society organizations on Wednesday. Over the next 3 years, the ministry plans to implement 2,500 different projects at a total cost of about 10 billion lari. That includes 1,000 kilometers new roads, providing plumbing for 500,000 more people, improving waste disposal infrastructure. This year, 1.26 billion lari will be spent. The government expects the implementation process to create 40,000 new jobs over the next 3 years. Georgia's Jewish community marked the start of Passover on the 10th of April. The holiday lasts until the 18th of April and commemorates the liberation of Jews from slavery in Egypt. Tbilisi City Council members voted to use 1.1 million lari from the reserve fund to compensate business owners who lost property in the Children's World Fire earlier this year. About 350 people will get 3,000 lari each. A locksmith died in a workplace accident in Chiatura. Rezo Talakhadze, who had worked in the manganese industry for 40 years, fell to his death while working in a factory owned by Georgian Manganese. An investigation has been launched into whether violations of health and safety rules contributed to his death, which indeed they did. You heard it here first. In 2016, 58 people died in workplace accidents in Georgia, according to data from the Ministry of Interior. Tbilisi Zoo received 19 penguins donated by the Bristol Zoo in the UK. A bus station will open in Tbilisi in late May to provide parking for 377 Tbilisi City buses. The 6-hectare station will also include facilities for servicing the buses, and the project's total cost is about 19 million lari. Also this week, 5 new buses will start operating on Route 9. Currently, there are 40 new buses operating in Tbilisi on Route 61, 51, 37, and 87. Misha caught some attention this week for posting on his Facebook page a proposal for Ukraine's government to build a wall separating the Russian-occupied Donbas region from the rest of the country. He said the wall should be erected temporarily while the government focuses on cracking down on corruption and supporting economic growth in the rest of the country. The government should then work on returning the occupied territory once they've shored up things elsewhere. The proposal is, of course, just one more desperate way for Misha to embarrass himself by saddling up to Trump. British American Tobacco filed a claim with the Constitutional Court in which they're suing Parliament. The suit alleges that Georgian law on tobacco control is unconstitutional because it bans the sale of tobacco products at below cost. According to British American Tobacco, there's no grounds under the Constitution of Georgia or the World Health Organization, which helps set international norms for tobacco regulation, to tell companies how they can set prices. The suit comes after the company was fined more than 100 million lari earlier this year after OGT, a Georgian cigarette manufacturer, filed a claim saying the British American Tobacco had illegally undercut them. International Monetary Fund's Executive Board is close to approving a new $285 million extended credit facility program agreed with Georgia back in March. Civil Aviation Agency announced that during the first 3 months of 2017, 620,000 passengers used the country's three main airports. The Tbilisi, do you know what the Tbilisi airport is called? The Shota Rustavelli International Airport, Batumi International Airport, and Kutaisi Davutoglu Shenibeli International Airport. That's a 44% increase on the same period from a year ago. The Young Lelos, Georgia's under-18 rugby team, defeated Japan in the under-18 Rugby Europe Championship semifinals on Tuesday by a score of 42-17. They'll play France in the finals on Saturday. Parliamentary news, Civil Society Coalition, This Affects You, a group that includes the hardest working NGO in the South Caucasus, Transparency International Georgia, and a bunch of other NGOs, filed a lawsuit in the Constitutional Court regarding the newly adopted surveillance bill. The group is critical of the bill because it doesn't guarantee rights to privacy and because it doesn't have enough built-in protection to ensure the new surveillance agency will be independent from the State Security Service, which is, of course, deeply intentional by the Otsneva government. President Mark Velashvili is also supporting the Constitutional Court's review of the bill under his capacity, as Amic has written an amicus curiae brief, which means friends of the court, an interested person who is not party to the case and who may submit a written opinion with regards to the case. Defense Minister Levon Isoria spoke to the Parliamentary Defense and Security Committee about ongoing and planned defense reforms. He said the reforms are in line with NATO's substantial package Georgia received in 2014, and they reflect the awareness that Russia is now the main threat to NATO. He defended the reinstatement of conscription as well, saying the country needs more troops and pointing to the recent restoration of conscription in Sweden and Lithuania. He defended budgetary reforms, pointing to the fact that 70% of the current military budget goes to salaries and social benefits, well above the NATO standard of 55% maximum. The ministry angered a lot of people earlier this year when it fired administrative staff in order to cut costs. The meme this week features a stereotypical Georgian guy's social media picture, profile pic, him standing in front of a microphone, Instagram, shirtless, tagged photos of him standing with a bunch of other dudes, LinkedIn photo, trying to look very serious, all from old Georgian movies. Stuff to read, Dustin Galbraith and David Cicinava, the Caucasus Research Resource Center, have a fantastic piece in Eurasianet about proposed constitutional reforms and how they would affect the outcome of future parliamentary elections, in particular the Form Commission's intention to replace the current mixed majoritarian proportional system with a proportional system that bans, blocks, and allocates undistributed seats to the leading party. They construct three data models based on different scenarios: the current mixed system, the new system proposed by the Reform Commission, and a theoretical scenario where seats were allocated on a proportional basis and undistributed seats are not reallocated to the leading party. What do they find? The first two scenarios would have resulted in roughly the same outcomes as actually occurred in the 2008-2016 elections. The third scenario, which isn't stacked so much in favor of the leading party, would have resulted in slimmer majorities in both elections. However, they find that in 2012, when Otsneva won by a 20-seat majority, their lead would have been much bigger if Georgia had a system where the undistributed seats were automatically allocated to the leading party, which is what the Reform Commission wants. The conclusion is that the proposed reform would really tip the scales in favor of the leading party, which for the time being is Otsneva. The best thing to do would be to make the system fully proportional, continue to allow blocks, and not allocate leftover seats to the leading party. Even better than that would be what they were talking about before, which is multi-member districts, meaning proportional within the traditional regions, like Imedeti, Samegrelo, or whatever else. This issue is really important. With the ruling party doesn't be sure the ruling party doesn't get to amend the Constitution and make themselves a permanent ruling party. What they really want to do is pass these constitutional amendments and then create tons and tons of small parties, which is easy to do with the amount of money that they have at their disposal to do that and jack up the number of people who are voting for very small parties in the next parliamentary elections. Also for Eurasianet, Irina Kelesayeva and Josh Kucera cover the presidential elections in South Ossetia. The victory of Parliament Speaker Anatoly Bibilov has everyone surprised, mainly because the Kremlin openly campaigned on behalf of incumbent Leonid Tibilov. It appears that voters, even though many of them want South Ossetia to integrate into the Russian Federation, resent Russia's meddling in their election, and Tibilov's campaigning on his close ties with Vladimir Putin actually backfired. All of that is a bit ironic because Bibilov is arguably the more pro-Russian of the two candidates. At the end of the day, it didn't really matter to Russia who won. Its dominance will continue regardless. The important thing here is that with the tiny, tiny little sliver of, they allowed fair elections, and that means that the Ossetians get to say, okay, we got to choose whatever we want. Keep in mind in these elections, of course, the Georgians that had been ethnically cleansed in 2008 were not allowed to participate. Liz Fuller on Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, also covers the presidential elections in South Ossetia. The victory for Bibilov puts Russia in a bind. Bibilov has lobbied for years to hold a referendum as soon as possible on South Ossetia's accession to Russia and recently said he wants to hold a vote by the end of 2017. Bibilov, on the other hand, who was Russia's preferred candidate, favored a policy of gradual integration. Russia prefers a more gradual policy because it lets them keep de facto control over South Ossetia while avoiding the international backlash that would come from formal annexation, like in the case of Crimea. It would be awkward and embarrassing for the Kremlin if the people of South Ossetia voted for extension and Russia was forced to reject that choice. Eka Akobia, who is dean of the School of Governance at Caucasus University, writes for the Clarion about the recent U.S. airstrikes against the Assad government in Syria and whether the U.S. is moving towards an actual strategy of resolving the conflict. The U.S. made a major U-turn in its policy towards Syria, she says, and many speculate it will now demand that Russia accept his removal from office, which is not going to happen. However, a political settlement would require a serious diplomatic commitment from the U.S. Personally, I think she gets it wrong in her hopes that Trump and Tillerson have an actual plan and we're implementing it by raining $60 million worth of Tomahawks missile on an empty field, but that's not the case. ISET publishes the results of an online survey where they asked respondents to identify which country they would like to have been born in. Number one is Georgia, followed by the U.S., Italy, United Kingdom, and Germany. In that order, every country in the top 10 other than the U.S. is located in Europe. Of 105 respondents, only one said they would like to have been born in Russia. Most of the respondents were women, most were single, and nearly all held at least a bachelor's degree. Respondents were also asked why they chose the country they did, with personal freedom, quality of education and healthcare, and opportunities for professional development getting the most responses. Of course, beautiful women, Iceland, and attractive men, Italy, mattered too. Time has a long-form piece about the black market for uranium in Georgia. Last year, a small-time trader was busted in Kobuleti for selling about 2 pounds of uranium to some undercover cops, highlighting the security threat posed by even small amounts of radioactive material falling into the wrong hands. Georgia is located on a smuggling route that stretches from Russia to Iran and Turkey into Syria and Iran, so law enforcement is working very hard to stamp out any potential trade in uranium. Terrorists could make a so-called dirty bomb out of a small amount of low-enriched uranium, and a device the size of a suitcase could spread radiation across several city blocks, potentially killing hundreds of thousands of people. Amy McKinnon for Coda Story covers hackers and trolls trying to use Twitter to manipulate voting behavior in parliamentary elections in Armenia earlier this month. Several journalists and bloggers had their accounts hacked before and during the elections. Most bizarre, a number of Russian-language profiles tweaked a fake letter from USAID which called on Armenians to vote in favor of the opposition, which was held up as an example of U.S. attempts to meddle in the elections. The letter contained numerous spelling errors and was sent by a Gmail account, and the analysis by the Atlantic Council found that accounts that tweeted were probably part of a coordinated group. It's a really great article. Check that out. That's going to be happening more and more. Wine Business Magazine, which covers Australian wine industry events, covered the popularity of Saperavi grapes in Australian vineyards. Currently, 20 vineyards grow varieties of Saperavi in Australia, and several do in the U.S. as well. It's still little known among consumers, but with more publicity, Saperavi will become globally known soon enough. All this stuff to read will be posted in our forum. This week's dive bar number is 95,960, the number of new driver's licenses issued in Georgia in 2016. That's an increase from 86,691 people who received licenses in 2015. Remember, do not drink and drive. So if you happen to be knocking one back at the dive bar in Fabrica or at the dive bar behind the Marriott, be sure that you take public transportation or a cab home. Or walk. The Caucasus Research Resource Center and the American Research Institute for the South Caucasus and American Councils are hosting a weekly Works in Progress at the CRC building on Chikwadze Street No. 1, formerly Chikwadze No. 5. The talk is on the 19th of April at 6:30 p.m., where Asya Darbinyan, one of the Strasser Center for Holocaust and Genocide Studies at Clark University, will talk about Russian humanitarianism towards Armenian refugees during the First World War. This is a big issue for Armenians and has big consequences for Armenia and Armenians today. It'll be an eye-opener. Go if you can. Registration has opened for Wings of Life World Run 2017. The Georgian part of the event will take place on the 7th of May in Kakheti, starting in Lopota. Last year, about 6,000 people participated in Georgia. Entry fees 30 lari, which goes directly to spinal cord research. You can register at www.wingsforlifeworldrun.com. The 86th International Session of European Youth Parliament needs organizers. It'll take place in November in Tbilisi. They need energetic, dedicated young people who can organize the event over the next 8 months. If interested in applying, send an email to Tbilisi 2017 at EYP, as in Paul, .org.ge. It's cool and worth doing. Let people you know. Malha's Erkvanidze is putting on a number of singing workshops in London late April, early May. His tour starts with an evening workshop in Bristol on the 24th of April, wraps up with two workshops in North London on the 3rd of May. We heard about it from the British Georgian Society. If interested, send an email to bernard.m.burns. That's bernard.m as in Mike, .burns at gmail.com, indicating which session you want to attend. Malchaz is an eminent Georgian musician and choir leader. He's currently director of the Sakhioba Ensemble. Songs will be taught by ear and no sight reading is required. For Friends of Georgia in the UK, renowned scholar Donald Rayfield is giving a lecture on Nikolaos Baratashvili at the Asia House of London on the 27th of April. The event marks 200 years since the birth of Baratashvili, one of Georgia's greatest poets. Georgia's ambassador to the UK, Tamar Berochashvili, will give opening remarks. Tickets are £10 each. Go to asiahouse.org to register. Rayfield is brilliant, funny, very knowledgeable, and super cool. If you were in London, go to this. Viktor Orban, Hungary's dictatorial nationalist freak of a leader, will be in Tbilisi on the 21st of April from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Courtyard Marriott on Freedom Square. The occasion is a Georgia-Hungary business forum. Prime Minister Kvitikashvili is alleged to be there as well, probably at the beginning part. If you care about the European Union, if you care about democracy, anybody wants to show up and wave signs and scream a lot, be sure to do that. Ask Hungarian friends for pithy things to write there, and be sure to take a lot of pictures and put them on social media. Ukrainian Film Day's Film Festival will screen at Amidani Cinema from the 27th to the 30th of April. The festival features documentaries by a number of young Ukrainian directors. Admissions to all films is free. Tatsmina Park will host an arts and crafts fair on the 30th of April. It starts at 12 p.m. It lasts till the evening. Admission is free. Guests will have a chance to buy arts and crafts made by local Tbilisi artists. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. Our email is tfieldpod@gmail.com or post to the form on our website, www.tfieldpod.com. And we will finish with, from 1982, Brothers, literally and figuratively, from Tulsa, Oklahoma. This is the Gap Band, and You Dropped a Bomb on Me.
Turn me on. bomber.